Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us here at episode 155 of the Westmarch Workshop. Happy birthday, Diablo. We've got a couple of things to go through and talk about here. It's a new year. It's a new show, kind of. Not really. Just me. But we do have a couple of things to go on and talk about. We, of course, have the 22nd anniversary of Diablo. Have some of my thoughts as I continue to go through and play through Diablo 2. There's been a little bit of some commotion going on about some Diablo job postings. The CFO from Activision has gotten fired. We've got a new Diablo hero coming in, Heroes of the Storm. We, of course, are going to be announcing the winners of the Book of Adria contest. And we've got a little bit of advice for those wanting to go and start making their way into games development as a career. Without further ado, let's go ahead and kick this episode off. And so thank you all for going and joining me here tonight. Or for those that are going through tuning and listening in on YouTube or iTunes at a later date. But of course, you know, one of the cool things that always goes through and happens that as it rings a new year, we're also ringing a new birthday for the game that started it all, Diablo 1, which, you know, went through and made its debut on the 31st of December back in 1996. So I think I made this joke on last year's episode that Diablo 1 was legal to drink. Well, it's still legal to drink now. It's like that one kid that works with you. That, you know, it's like he's a generation below you, but he's like legal to drink, and so you kind of like invite him out anyways, and just kind of like somewhat awkward. And it was actually one of those things that I was thinking about that was so funny, at least to me, that, like, you know, one of the big complaints about, like, the since Diablo 3 debuted, you know, in 2008 with the rainbow, and people were going and saying that you're losing that dark feel. Like, Diablo has to be like a dark game. This isn't for kids. It's not family friendly or anything like that. Like, how old are you? Because if you're my age, that means you started playing Diablo like when you were 12. And it's just so funny seeing people nowadays that are going back and saying, like, Diablo's not for kids. I don't want, like, some punky teenagers going and, like, clouding up my game. This is a game that's just for adults. And yet, you know, think about the age that you were when you first started playing the game. Obviously, there's going to be some, you know, outliers there that were, you know, older when they went through and started playing. But, you know, how many people have you talked to or that you know that started playing the game like when you were in middle school or maybe even elementary or high school? Just like, we were kids when we first went through and started playing. Sure, we do want the game to still be mature rated, but, you know, it's a funny criticism that I see with people not wanting, you know, kids going and being in their game. But, you know, also the other thing that comes with the anniversary of Diablo is the Darkening of Tristram. If you haven't had the chance to go and check this out, or if you're just wanting to go and relive it again, you'll actually be able to go and hop into the Darkening of Tristram event. It has the precursor that's going on right now that's tied to a couple of achievements. One of them is going and hunting down the temporal cultists and collecting all of the cultist pages. But the actual event itself will be beginning, I believe, in 2 days. It's January 1st through the 3rd is the precursor, with January 4th being the actual start of the event, I believe. Though, do correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But it's just, you know, you get to go back, kind of play a custom rift that is made to be a recreation of Diablo 1. There's some pets, some portrait frames that you can go and get in the game. And it's a little fun little journey back of seeing what, you know, kind of like gameplay was pseudo-like with Diablo 1, namely not being able to run. You have to walk everywhere. And now, there's actually a little bit of more context, I guess, to the Darkening of Tristram. Because if we go back and we look at that Future of Diablo article from Kotaku, and, you know, I'm probably going to be referencing that article quite a bit. I've talked about it on the last couple of episodes. I'm probably going to be talking about it on the next couple of episodes. It's just, it brings so much context to everything. And if we go and we look at the timeline that was laid out in that article, kind of all of the content cycle for D3 had more or less wrapped up at that point. The main team was going and kind of working on that Project Hades, which was apparently some sort of Dark Souls-like title. And that would have kind of placed the Darkening of Tristram as kind of like the last kind of like big hurrah and content update that they would have done for Diablo 3. And we had a couple of little minor patches between then and when, apparently, according to the article, you know, Project Hades was scrapped, and then they used that period of time to really push to do some more content for Diablo 3 that then became the Necromancer. And so it's kind of interesting when you go through and you're looking at you know, things from the kind of like that perspective. And you know, it's, well, if that is kind of like the case, I guess it makes it so that way they already had kind of said that the Darkening of Tristram was like a labor of love from the developers, and it was something that they wanted to do as like a big you know, kind of like homage to Diablo 1 in like the legacy of the franchise. And if like that time frame works out the way that it is in my head, then that would kind of like mean that this was just like they thought that this might have been some of the last content that they would have made for D3, you know, which is wanting to go through and say that, you know, we want to kind of like take it back to the roots before everything, you know, moves on to the next project. It was just kind of like one of those little things that I was thinking about. But definitely a cheers and a toast to Diablo 1. And what we hope to have, you know, 22 more years of this franchise that we all know and love so much. You know, we might have some questions regarding where it's going in the future, but we have no choice but to wait and see at this point. And also, speaking of kind of like the yesteryear Diablos, I haven't had as much time to go and put into D2, but I have at least beaten Nightmare, and I'm now... I believe in Act 2 Hell, and it is one of those ones that's just so striking with the like the just those ramps up in difficulty, and it is very familiar to the feeling of going back to early Diablo 3 in that Inferno difficulty. Not as bad as a ramp in difficulty, like going from Act 1 to Act 2. But it is one of those ones that's definitely noticeable, and it really comes down, like, in Act 2 Inferno, the biggest problem was the bees, you know, because they're just horrendous, and how much damage that they did, how quickly that they did damage, and if you got a group of them, they were just everywhere, with, it made it very difficult to dodge their attacks. And so, The difficulty ramp in Act 2 is, for me at least, has been the scarabs. When you go to the increasing difficulty levels in D2, you would get negative resistances in addition to the monsters having upped damage, so it had like this multiplier effect. And if you don't have like max lightning resistance from the get-go, you are in for a world of hurt. And it's something that, you know, since I haven't played Diablo 2 a lot, like, in the last couple of years, this is one of those ones that I've just been, like, absolutely dreading. You know, just, like, every time, if you used to play Diablo 2 and you haven't played it in a while, and you go and you start playing again, as soon as you, like, go into, like, say, maybe the jail, or not even the jail, but, like, the underground passage, you already start worrying about Duriel. Because that's like the big thing that you always remember. That's just going to be so painful, and I've been dreading, like, when I was going through Act 5 on Nightmare, I was just like, oh man, I got to do the maggot layer in Hell. This is going to be terrible. This is going to be so bad, and yeah, it's been pretty bad. Thankfully, I've got I'm playing an assassin, so I have Fade, so I can go and up my resists. But one of the things that I didn't quite remember about Diablo 2 that does make it a lot closer to D3 is that even though, you know, a lot of your actual player power comes from your skills, there is a huge amount that does come from your items. And one of my friends that I was going and playing with found a Bartix, and I finally met the requirements to go and equip it. And as soon as I did, the game changed. And this was going towards the end of Nightmare when I actually got it equipped. And it was just, it like upped all of my damage significantly. Like my lightning traps were going from, you know, like I think like 705 to like 859. And then it also upped all of my passive bonuses, because at that point I'd already maxed Lightning Trap. I was putting points in Death Sentry for the synergy bonuses, and instead of adding like 49 damage on each level, it was now adding like 60 damage on each level. So it was just, it had like this huge power spike. A ton of attack rating as well, which then helped with the kicks that I was using for the lightning immune mobs, and just it was a huge game changer. My Shadow Warrior was all of a sudden a lot tankier. I had a ton more you know, resists from Fade. My block chance for Claw Mastery went up a hell of a lot. It was just like the game got significantly more manageable just with that single item, and that was one of those ones I was just like, wow, this does actually feel a lot like D3 when you get like that first like 2-piece or 4-piece set bonus, where everything just like becomes more streamlined. It's not face roll. It's still not easy, but it is nowhere near as challenging as what it was. And I think a lot of that still has to do with like kind of like your resists matter a lot more. Especially as you get into those higher difficulties, because in Hell you're negative 100 to all of your resists, and also the elemental immunities. And so I'm in the mid 40s right now. I think I'm like 47 or something along those lines. That it is, I don't have a lot to diversify in my build just yet. That I was kind of in the beginning putting points kind of like equally into Dragon, Dragon Talon, I think it was the one, the multi kick. I can't even remember now, but it was kind of like splitting points between filling out all of my synergies, getting all of my like little 1 points, you know, Fade, Venom, and such, and leveling up Lightning Sentry for my damage dealing. But then it got to the point where it's like I had to focus. I just had to focus on Lightning Sentry and nothing else. It's the only way I was getting through like the bottom end of Nightmare. And then as I was getting towards Act 5 and Nightmare, and now especially in Hell, being single elemental hurts. Like, you just flat out ignore mobs. Going through the Worldstone Keep, and of course I rolled Gloams like you always do. And it was just, everything was lightning immune, and so I found myself just, you know, kind of having a Cloak of Shadows and run through everything, just hoping to not, like, get one-shot by, you know, I guess not one-shot, but, like, you know, you've got, like, 20 Gloams on the screen, and they all hit you with the lightning bolt at once, and then you die, because that's what Gloams do. It's been interesting, like, because even I have like this huge power boost from that Bartux, and I am just kind of like, it makes it more manageable as I go through and I get more items. Like, I've got a Jade Talon that's just kind of like sitting there waiting for me, which is going to be a huge like resist boost and a couple of little skill boosts, and it's like little more incremental like boosts of power, as opposed to just, you know, 1 to 100 that D3 is, but definitely has a noticeable boost where just like a single item can be a game changer. And I know there's certain other builds out there, particularly like if you're any type of poison, whether you're like a poison necromancer as such, getting a death's web is just, it makes the game like, you know, maybe not 0 to 100, but like 0 to 60. Definitely takes you, you get up to speed, you're getting into that merge lane, and you're ready to go. So there are some things actually going back and playing like D2 a lot. Like the kind of like the first time since starting like, you know, D3 oh so many years ago. that it is it's been fun kind of comparing and contrasting the differences. I still haven't hit you know, of course, the end game yet. I haven't started doing my my bail runs or attempting Uber Tristram, you know, or doing MF runs or anything like that. So still I've still got climbing to go to fully like kind of like compare and contrast. But it is, it's been an ongoing project, and it's probably going to be put on hold a little bit here as we come close to season 16 and just some other stuff that's going on that will, that I won't have as much time to devote to, you know, kind of like online gaming in the near future. But it's kind of like it'll be an ongoing project of mine probably for, you know, a good chunk of early 2019. And then there's one topic that I really didn't think that I would even be talking about. We haven't really talked about too much on the show, is the like Diablo job postings. It's kind of like been one of those ones. I know, you know, Riker still goes through and continues to cover any type of significant job postings that might be interesting. And this was just one I had to go and talk about because they made a change with how the Diablo jobs are posted. So you can see here, you've got a ton of postings that are all labeled unannounced project, unannounced project, unannounced project. And now, this shouldn't be a surprise. Like, we know that there's multiple Diablo teams working on multiple Diablo projects. I'm sure that, that, you know, probably triggers people saying that. But, you know, just, it was, like, a week ago, they were all listed under unannounced games, but then when you clicked on the job posting itself, it specifically called out that it was for a Diablo, a Diablo unannounced project. And all they did was just change the category from unannounced project listed for Diablo to Diablo as an unannounced project. And someone went through and stated that this is confirmation that there's a Diablo 3 expansion being developed. And now I know that a lot of the posts on like Reddit and the forums have been edited or taken down and such, but I just want to say that if you read any of those articles and you think that there might be a merit of truth to any of it, there is not. There none whatsoever. This is just some writer's flight of fancy that, you know, going through and talking with them, they really had no concept or knowledge of the current workings of the Diablo 3 development teams, and they thought that if it meant that it was under the Diablo category, that it was the Diablo 3 team, which doesn't really exist. And so that meant that this specifically had to be a Diablo 3 expansion or a class pack or something like that. And now it was... That's just so wrong. There is no Diablo 3 team. There is Team 3, which historically worked on Diablo 3 and is now working on, you know, an unannounced project, which, going back to that Kotaku article, which supposedly is codenamed Project Fenris. And this is something that, like, the developers were open about, like, at BlizzCon. There were people that were on Team 3 that were going through and stating, I am not working on Diablo Immortal. I am not working on Diablo 3. I am working on a Diablo project. You know, so, like, it's not... That's not the Diablo 3 team. And then if you go and look at the current team that's handling Diablo 3, that's Classic Games. And, you know, even though they've never made any official announcement that they've handed it over to Classic Games, everyone that's done any type of press event for the Diablo 3 Switch since the Switch announcement has been on Classic Games. There were Classic Games developers at BlizzCon that were talking about the work that they were continuing to do on Diablo 3. It's just like, you know, it's just because there was no ticker tape parade for it doesn't mean that that's not the case. They just, you know, made an internal transfer of the game from one team to another. Doesn't really require that they go all out with, like, super bells and whistles stating that this is, you know, this is something that's happening. It's just something that's done in the background, and it is what it is. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they might not in the future do a character pack. I believe an expansion is completely off the table. But, you know, once like Warcraft 3 Reforge is done and shipped, there is a possibility of them going back and doing a character pack. From what we've seen with the, like, kind of like the quarterly earnings reports and such, one of the quarterly earnings was mentioned that they had an earnings offset, a positive earnings offset, thanks in part to the Diablo 3 Necromancer character pack. And now we don't know exactly how profitable that was, but that might be kind of like a positive boost. That even though that was kind of like the last hurrah from Team 3 for Diablo 3, that doesn't mean that Classic Games is kind of bound to similar, you know, kind of content updates where you're only going to do, you know, like balance fixes and stuff like that. If they can make a case for it that there will be, you know, a positive revenue stream for doing a new character pack, I'm sure they'll go, that they'll get the green light for it. Anything that they do from this point is going to be easier than the Necromancer, given that the majority of development time for the Necro was done for Revive, and, well, no other class has Revive. So anything else should definitely have a smaller development time, smaller, you know, kind of like planning, implementation, release window. But it, again, that's going to be something that's going to be past the summer. So it's going to be after Warcraft 3 Reforged. Because we don't really know like how big Classic Games is and what they, how they divvy up their projects and such. But now that they're kind of, you know, part of the modern Diablo community, the modern Diablo family, we hope to make some connections there and begin to learn more about them and what they do. And not just because it's Diablo related, although that's the spark, but I did a interview for BlizzPro, you know, with one of the producers for Warcraft 3 Reforged, and it was really cool. Like the passion that these guys have for these older titles and bringing them up to date. Like they want, they're like, they want to make like the whole backlog of category of classic games like playable on modern systems and such. That means that we may one day see a Diablo 1 or Diablo 2 remaster. It's not a guarantee, but it's a pretty good indication. And then also, even though we were talking about Warcraft 3 before and after the interview, because when he found out that, you know, I was more of a Diablo guy with the Diablo podcast, we sat there and we talked about like old school, like Diablo, you know, D3 and all this other stuff for quite a bit. It was a really fun conversation. And so there's a lot of people on Classic Games that have that have some serious dedication and some hardcore passion for the Diablo franchise. So season 16 I think might be kind of like an indication of things to come. I'm not sure how often we'll actually get you know, class updates or set balancing. But I really hope that just the Ring of Royal Grandeur buff is just kind of like a inkling of some of the ideas that they have going forward, you know, for the future of the seasons and for the future of D3. And then also kind of going on a similar kind of a tangent here as we go in, another kind of like news headline that I've seen popped up on Reddit in the community is that the CFO for Activision Blizzard, not the CFO for Blizzard, was recently fired. And as it turns out, that is apparently he had negotiated and worked out a deal and was going to get a job over at Netflix. And then when Activision found out about this deal that was going on, they terminated him, I guess, basically before he could, you know, tender his resignation. Just kind of like as one of those ones that I guess this was like a hidden deal, and they were, and that the CFO was just kind of like going to jump ship, and so they wanted to like cut him off. I really don't know too much about the specifics or if there's any type, what type of golden parachutes there are, you know, or anything like that, or severance pays and all those other types of stuff. But it'd be definitely one of those ones. And in the grand scheme of things, I know a lot of people are going through and saying that, you know, well, maybe this is a sign of change and that maybe things will turn back around. Again, this was the CFO for Activision Blizzard, not Blizzard itself. And as much as we all want to go through and, you know, like kind of like harp on, oh, Activision is taking over Blizzard and such, that they haven't yet, and there's still some degrees of separation, you know, between the holding company and the developer. That I really don't think that this is going to have really any impact on Blizzard or any of their games. It's not going to cancel Diablo Immortal. Sorry, everybody. And that, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't. And then, on our final bit of kind of like, Diablo related news is, of course, we've got a new Diablo hero going through and joining Heroes of the Storm. You know, we talked a little bit about how, support for Heroes of the Storm was kind of being rolled back. It's not exactly what I would call maintenance mode. The esports, the HGC, has been, you know, just completely gutted. There's some fan in professional interest in going, trying to make their own kind of like private leagues for Heroes Esports. We haven't seen anything too much come of that substantially. But I'm sure that might be a couple months in the planning before we see anything, you know, come about from that. But we at least have our first new hero since this kind of like announcement of the rollback. And it's our boy, Imperius. My favorite angel of the Anguirus Council, and I've been waiting for this one for a while. I can't wait to go and get my hands on this guy. I know he's on the PTR right now. I never really get around to playing the Heroes PTR, but I can guarantee you that when he comes out in 2 weeks' time, because normally I believe it's always a two-week turnaround from PTR to launch, I'm going to be playing myself some Imperius. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be cool. So that'll give me, like, what? A couple of days in between, maybe like 2 whole days in between the launch of Imperius and the start of season 16. His skill set looks really cool. They don't have like a, they just have like the patch notes here. They don't have a full write up of all of his skills. There is, of course, the Hero Spotlight video that they have up on Twitter and on YouTube. If you want to go through and check that out, in order to see his abilities in action, he looks like a pretty menacing brawler. He has like the warrior category, as opposed to being an assassin, like a lot of the last couple of heroes. And he definitely looks as if his abilities are gonna put on some hurt. He's got some pretty decent sustain thanks to the molten armor. Though he is definitely a hero fighter. All of his abilities are, you know, basically trigger more so on heroes than minions. He has some decent CC, but he doesn't look that his kind of like initiates, his gap closers are relatively short range, and he doesn't really have any type of kind of like speed boost mechanics or anything. So it looks like he's going to be susceptible to kiting. I have to wait and see what that works out with. I'm sure that if you have a good hero support from the rest of your team with some slows or some other CC, that he could make some pretty devastating combos. Especially like just like that celestial charge, his Q, it can skewer multiple heroes, and so he shoots out with Solarion. And he just, like, in the video, it shows him, like, just skewering, like, 3 heroes in a row. And that just looks like so much fun. I can't wait to go through and try him out. Of course, you know, one, I'm partial to Imperius. Absolutely love him. And Crow, if you're watching this, I know that you hate every word that I'm saying right now. Because you hate Imperius so much. But, sorry. He's my favorite. But I'm looking forward to that. Can't wait to go and see what his actual talents are, how you can go and modify his abilities, because it seems that he has just like that lunge forward as an initiate. He also, his W, the Solarion's Flare, shoots out a wave. And if you hit them in the center of the wave, you'll slow an enemy for a couple seconds, and so you kind of like start with the flare, go in with the skewer, and then you hit with the molten armor, which does an AoE kind of like damage around you. Or not AoE, it fires off like every quarter second, and it targets, you know, one hero at a time, and will split around. If there's five heroes, every shot will shoot a different one in line until it's hit all of them, and kind of like go and loop around in a circle. Or if you have just a single hero by you that you've able to like duel or cordon off, it's just going to hit them. And so if you're fighting just like a single target, it's going to do a ton of damage, and also heals you for, if it, against another hero, it heals you for 200% of the damage that it does. It is, it sounds like an awesome skill set, though. Not sure how much enjoyment I'm going to get out of it. One of my biggest problems is, of course, always being kited when I'm playing other heroes, and so I think that it might end up what happens to me a lot. But who knows? We'll have to see. Maybe I can get on there and stream a little bit. I actually, speaking of streaming, I do plan on streaming a little bit this Friday for some of my Diablo 2. We'll see how my work schedule feels about that one, but it's at least a little bit of a commitment that I am going to try and make to go and get that done, as well as just kind of like get a little bit of that that D2 feeling for everybody there. We'd all relive those memories as you watch me die a lot to lightning scarabs. And you know, the last thing, of course, that we have is going into the Book of Adria contest for today. But before that, there is one little thing that went through and started up just yesterday, and I wanted to take a little bit of the time to go through and talk about this. And you know, it's something that, you know, Leviathan and I have talked about, like pretty much almost everyone like at BlizzPro and a lot of other people. We do this, you know, one, because we have a passion for Diablo, we have a passion for Blizzard, and we're all, you know, pretty interested in, you know, game development, wanting to make games, or what it takes to be a game developer and such. And there is a game developer that went through and made this website called startmakinggames.com. And the developer's name is Craig Morrison. He's one of the developers on World of Warcraft. And he's been pretty open about trying to give resources to like the next generation of game developers. And so he went and started the new year with launching this web service as just, you know, startmakinggames.com. And it walks you through almost every step of the way of what it takes in order to get your foot in the door. Everything from just explaining the website, the introduction, you know, what's the point, you know, of the website, what are the goals that he's trying to do, as well as just going into like the how, you know, giving some suggestions on everything from the engines that you should start, what are classes or education that you should go and look towards, even to like tips to finding jobs, like how you should set yourself up. Like cover letter writing, all those things, you know, that it's not just an interesting source for trying to get your foot in the door for games development, because a lot of the things it talks about, especially in that jobs portion, is universal across any any career path, career choice that you might have. It's a really cool resource. He's put a lot of time and effort into it, and it's something that he is just passionate about. And as a developer on Twitter, he's really open about talking about game development and art and all other types of stuff. He's also a phenomenal painter of Warhammer models, just throwing it out there. So I would definitely go through and check him out. He is at Cerulean on Twitter, Cerulion. He's got the social media links and stuff like that at the bottom of the webpage. I definitely suggest that you should go and check that out. If you have any interest in getting into games development, or just like kind of like a cursory niche or itch about game development. It's a resource that's worth going and checking out. Without further ado, of course, we've got the Book of Adria contest, which, you know, I asked for you guys to go and, you know, send me an email with, you know, what is, like, kind of like the aspect of lore or, like, the next story thing that you would like to see, like, in the next Diablo game, whether it's Immortal or D4 or what have you. And so we're gonna go through some of my favorites here that we got. Of course, I have to give a shout out to Watson here, always going through and giving us nice little tidbits and emails and lore questions and stuff like that. The question that he wanted to go through and have asked was that no one's been able to so this is my question that no one has been able to answer me. What abilities did the additional follower skills offer, and why were they not included? And he also included a picture of one of the early development files that had a picture of those skills. Let me bring them up here. Sorry for a little bit of a delay. This is one of those ones where if I was better prepared, I was running a little bit late. I should have pulled this up beforehand. And here we go. You can see that in the early development that there was actually a third row of skills that were available for the followers. And for that one, I think the reason why no one's been able to answer that one, Watson, is because they never told us. And so, like, Blizzard is the only people that know, and we don't even know if all of those were, like, fully developed or implemented. Sorry. Maybe it'd be an interesting question to maybe ask some of the developers at BlizzCon one of these years to see if anybody there remembers. The next kind of runner-up, this one comes from Thomas. I wanted to chime in on what my favorite thing about Diablo is, and this one is not the lore at all for me, it's the music. Matt Uelmen was the most perfect match for Diablo. For the longest time in Diablo, I never cared for the lore. It wasn't until the Book of Cain that I began really researching more into the universe of Diablo. The music, however, is what put it all in place for me. The sense of time, age, and the period of what year it actually was, it all astounded me to this day that a soundtrack still holds up with raw instrumentation and 12-stringed open chords. It can instantly place you directly in time and essence of what an entire universe was built upon. I haven't seen that kind of thing until the new Doom was released. It was a friend of mine that got me into Diablo, but it was the music that got me hooked. I've never heard anything like it in my life, and I still haven't heard anything like it today. It's definitely one of those things that comes together at the perfect moment in time to create one of the most iconic games of all time. Oddly enough, there isn't much music in the Diablo game itself, as in music playing by people in the actual game or in the books, so I would like to the next Diablo to be explored musically more. As in, he wants to see, like, what are, like, the music styles that are within, like, Diablo itself. And this is one of those ones that definitely, like, resonated with me, because music is one of my favorite aspects of Diablo. And for me, it was, like, my biggest letdown with the original Diablo 3, was even though that a lot of the music was, you know, interesting, it wasn't there. You know, it was kind of like just like the background melody. It didn't have a forceful presence. As when going back and playing Diablo 2, like, you have to have the music on. You have to, because every single time that one of those new songs starts as you transition between levels, that you just have those memories kind of like wash upon you. Like Thomas was going and saying, you know, at least for me, like, hearing certain tracks just like takes me back to my dial-up days. It just has such strong emotions and memories that are tied, you know, into those songs. I really, really hope that they follow in the vein that they did with Reaper of Souls, you know, for the next Diablo title, and that they really make music a part of the game and not just ambiance. They really need to make it a forceful presence that helps to trigger those memories, that when you hear this track, you're thinking of this part of the game. Like, you know, like what if you think of Bastion's Keep, like, you don't really think of music. You know, in a Diablo game, that should be something that you think about, that you hear this track and you instantly think of what zone it's from. And that to me is like a core part of Diablo. Next, we're getting to our runner up here, and so this one comes from Luke. Hey Nineball, thanks for going and hosting the show. Even though Leviathan needed to take some time off, I particularly enjoyed the episode and the focus of lore. My favorite part of fantasy and just games in general is definitely the world-building aspect. But now for the question that I would love to know more about is the Witch Doctor's culture. They're interesting in their own right, but I'd love to see what a melee or a range-based warrior looks like in their culture. The cultural themes are so very cool, and I enjoy them a lot since I was born in South Africa. Looking forward to the next episode. Now this is, I thought that was actually really cool, because... this is like one of those ones where it's like we definitely associate classes to cultures. You know, the monk with Ivgorod, the necromancers are a culture in and of themselves. You know, the sorcerers and wizards, you know, with kind of like the mage clans in Khajistan or Zal? Damn, I can't remember what the wizard hometown was called. I fail. You know, but it's one of those ones. But what happens if you go and you kind of look at different aspects? Because obviously, like, not everyone on the Scovos Isles is an Amazon. We even know that, you know, like, in the game, because the Sisters of the Sightless Eye are an offshoot from, you know, Scovos. They're kind of like a... They stole the artifact, the Sightless Eye, and ran away with it, you know, to the mountains in Condurus. And so that you have from that same culture, you have like the Amazons, whereas you have the Rogues and you have the Seers. There's a lot of different type of kind of like archetypes and classes that you can get from one culture. And what would it be, not just like looking at the Witch Doctor's culture, but if you start looking at, you know, like what is a warrior from, you know, Chaldeum versus a warrior from Westmarch, you know, and that's some of those ones where it's like you kind of like can compare and contrast, like maybe like an Iron Wolf to a Paladin, and that you have like a melee, maybe a range, maybe a caster archetype from each of these zones, and that could be something that they branch out on for, you know, all these different like little aspects that they could go with in the game. Immortal is setting itself up to be like a kind of like a shoo-in of doing stuff like this, because they are putting more focus on like geography and going and seeing all those zones. And I really do hope that Diablo 4 follows in that same footstep and is a lot more open-ended, you know, with the end game, allowing you to go between these different zones, between these different just areas, and explore more of the world, more of the culture, you know, in these areas. And you know, why not go through and, well, you know, demon hunters are all these like ranged badasses. But what about the one that actually isn't really all that good of a crossbow? What about the one that really just wants to go through and, you know, hack you up with some axes? And so you have kind of like a demon, instead of like a demon hunter, I don't know, a demon assassin. I'm trying to look for something that's like demon barbarian. No, that's done. Demon warrior. No, that sounds corny. I don't know. So someone else there will be better at making up names than I will be. But you know, it'd be cool to see what the different aspects, and that also would allow you to kind of, I guess, maybe it will diverge from some of the history of like Diablo 2, where you have very varied play styles within each of the classes. That maybe you can focus in on a particular play style for a particular class, not have to worry about it making it too having a lot of like a variance or variations in play style for that particular class, and instead doing more classes that can zero in and like really perfect that type of playstyle. You know, that you could do, like, say, like the Witch Doctor could be, you know, a lot of like weird, kooky, gimmicky pets that kind of act as a barrier, but most of your damage is coming from like the ghosts and the poisons and venoms that you're throwing over at the enemy. Whereas like the Necromancer would actually be more like the opposite, that the pets are doing all the damage, but you're debuffing, you know, the enemies through your curses and such, whereas not doing quite as much damage yourself. You know, I don't know. It seems like a big divergence from where the history of the titles are, but it just would be like an idea or a concept. And that's one of those things I really like this email from Luke. Not so much necessarily just specifically from like the Witch Doctor's culture, but there's a lot going on there, you know, especially like in the Book of Adria itself. It kind of talks about how some of the Witch Doctor's spirits that they worship were like their spirit of destruction that they worship is actually Baal, and they don't know it. So it kind of like some of those crossovers between like you know, the different spirits and you know, Loa or demigods or gods or whatever that these different cultures, you know, pray to or believe in might actually be like ancient Nephilim or, you know, primevals or, you know, members of the Anguirus Council and such. It's I really like that idea of kind of like the what if they really focus and drill down on those individual aspects, like the pulling like kind of like archetypes from those cultures instead of just focusing on one. Like, here's just like, you know, the sorcerer of Khedistan. Well, let's go and look at a warrior from Khedistan, or what a ranger might look at, or maybe even like a healer or a support. But moving on, we now have the winner of the Book of Adria, and this one is going to go out to Mr. Dorcas. You know, been a long time follower of the show, and I definitely thank you for going and sending in this email. And his email is, I actually have been interested in the new character Leah, especially about the fact that she is the child of Adria and Aiden. Leah seems to be in possession of quite a bit of power, which seems that she's unable to control before she met her tragedy at Diablo's possession. But I'm interested in the point forward from Diablo 3, and hopefully it'll focus in on the fate of Leah, as it seems that she's just not completely dead, but perhaps maybe trapped along with the evils in the Black Soulstone. I wonder if she'll become of a great influence in the new hero of the next game, or perhaps a quest to save her soul, maybe even resurrect her. There was a bit of alluding to it. I hope it will be well written and not just written off. And this is something, you know, I've been talking about on this podcast, and even talking about back on the, you know, the Diablo Inc. Gamers podcast, is that I've always wanted to know what happened to Leah after she was possessed, you know, by Diablo and the Primeval. And they kind of you know hint at it a little bit, you know, like what can we do to find like redemption for Leah's soul? And then she's just not like, the only part that she's brought up in Reaper of Souls is your quest for vengeance on Adria. But, you know, I felt that it would have been a perfect opportunity at some point going through Pandemonium to find part of Leah's soul, you know, or talk to her, you know. But then I guess it could also be that maybe it's just like she is trapped in the Black Soulstone, you know, maybe she's free, or maybe she's been partially consumed by the Diablo. But I too want to know like what happened to her. It just seems like such a waste that you go through all the trouble of making this new character, you know, adding it into the storyline, and then, you know, she basically goes from birth to death in the same game, you know, because this is the first time that we see her. She's made up to be like the super important character, and then just one done, and then like her death isn't even acknowledged in the ending cinematic for D3. Like, you're throwing off you're kicking off the corpse of Diablo from the, you know, the Silver Arch, and it's just like, Leah's in there somewhere, but who cares, you know? Just I want to know what happened. Even if it's just like a small little quest line that, you know, her soul is consumed. It's no more. You know, it's just like kind of like, you know, the Dark Wanderer and, you know, Aiden, her father before her, that, you know, Diablo is consumed it all and she's completely gone. Like that would suck, but it would be an ending. And it would also be a rather fitting ending for, you know, Diablo. This is one where, you know, no matter how many times you defeat the great evils, they always comes back. There's always darkness. It's never defeated. And that's kind of like one of those core things that it's like, kind of like, if they want to really dig into that horror vibe, for, you know, going back to like the original Diablo, that would be one way of doing it. That there is no happy endings, you know. But that's one of those things, also looking at like what they could do with the story for the next Diablo game going forward from Diablo 3. Like, it'd be perfect, you know, do just like another 20-year jump and then just have it, you know, like start at the death of the Nephilim. You know, they were just like, the Nephilim from D3 was just a one-off. Like, sure, there's other Nephilim that are being awakened and going through and getting their power, but like, just like, you know, Odyssean, like, there's only gonna be like one hero of this power like every couple thousand years. And so now, like, they died of old age and there's no one left to protect Sanctuary, and that's where, you know, the Burning Hells come back in order to, you know, try and sink their teeth into Sanctuary, you know. Or what, maybe at that point Imperius goes and says, well, now it's time to screw them. I saw what they could do. We need to kill them. I hope they don't do that with Imperius. I want to fight on Imperius's side. Love Imperius. But, you know, it's just one of those things. So definitely, thank you. And for those people that went through and entered and I didn't have a chance to go and read your entries, you know, fret not. I still thank you. Enjoyed going through and reading all of them. It was really cool. You know, having so many people go through and send in responses, you know, and I still have an extra couple emails here to go and read for just like our community feedback section. I'll try to go and wrap it up and make it a little bit of a shorter episode here for tonight. Fortunately, I got a early day tomorrow, so can't go too late. And so as we go into our community section, we've got Trep Chains. I wanted to go through. I just wanted to say thank you for continuing to discuss Diablo. I'm only a small content creator myself, but as I'm still primarily playing and uploading Diablo, it's really hard with all the comments to me being try Path of Exile. What do you think of Immortal? I can imagine that you're only getting more. It's also hard seeing many of the larger Diablo content creators jump ship, even though it's understandable. But thank you. It's nice to see that some larger content creators still discussing Diablo. Gives me hope. All the best and keep it up. Well, yeah, definitely thank you for that. I appreciate that. And yeah, it's one of those ones where, you know, especially you have like a lot of your big name Diablo content creators. The thing you have to realize is that this is, for a lot of them, this is their entirety of their income. Like, they're full-time streamers, full-time content creators, all about this franchise. And it's definitely hit a lull, kind of like a down zone. There's not going to be a lot of content until Immortal comes out. You know, and even when Immortal comes out, I imagine that the next big content for the Diablo franchise will be Immortal. You can imagine that with the community's reaction to Immortal and still the large amount of skepticism and the amount of goodwill building that Blizzard's going to have to go through in order to get the community to accept Immortal, that prospect isn't looking too good. And then when you're looking towards the future, towards like Project Fenris, that still could be years away. They have to diversify what it is that they cover. Just, you know, because they have to, you know, they have to make an income. It's a lot different for me that this is just a passion project. You know, I don't make any money whatsoever. You know, all the money that's gained from the subscriptions to the BlizzPro channel go back to hosting the BlizzPro website that, you know, that helped start this podcast and is giving myself the platform of which to go and talk about. Diablo, that, you know, my approach to content creation is a lot different from some of the other big names out there, that they live off of this. And so they're at a point they're forced to diversify, because if they don't, that means less of a check, because there's less people watching, you know, D3 content. So it definitely is one of those ones where it makes sense, and it is no bad feelings whatsoever to anybody that's going and doing stuff. But you go through and you look at it, you know, like Bloodshed, Leviathan, Riker, they're all like doing like some more coverage of like Path of Exile, because Betrayal has been like really awesome. But they're all currently still going and talking about season 16. You know, as soon as season 16 hits, they're all hopping back on to go through and play, because, you know, it's something that they're still passionate about. It's a game that they still love, but they just have to think about long-term sustainability of themselves as a brand, you know, and a content creator. So, you know, that's what it is. And, you know, just people are, that's just kind of like the zeitgeist in the Diablo community right now, is everyone is going to be like, don't you have a phone? Why aren't you playing Path of Exile? Blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, as a Diablo content creator, that's just something that you're just going to have to accept for the near mid-range future. If you don't mind, send me a link to your channel and the stuff that you do. I'd like to go through and check it out. I'd like to see what it is that you're going through and doing in the Diablo community. Always love having it grow just like a little bit more. And then from there, I think actually, yep. Oops, that was it. That was it. Then the rest of these were all. I'm not gonna be going through all of the Book of Adria, entries. So that is gonna bring us to the close for tonight's episode. But we are gonna end this episode on a high note, and I do want to go through and at least make this as a mention. The next episode, things are going to be a little bit different. Things are going to be changing up. Our next episode is actually going to be recorded on Tuesday, January 15th. That's right. We're going to be going live on a Tuesday, not a Wednesday, but there's a reason for that. We're going to be having a very special guest on the show on next episode, episode 156. We're going to actually have Riker on the show to come through and talk about all things Diablo. I'm excited about it. I hope you guys are excited about it. Absolutely love Riker. Really great guy. And I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of stuff to go and talk about. I do hope that you go through and join us for episode 156 on Tuesday the 15th. Join us. Come in for the chat. It's going to be fun. I'm sure things are going to be a little bit crazier than our typical episodes, and we'll see how everything goes. And also, hopefully we'll have this up in time. This will be kind of a reminder that the Darkening of Trinstrum event will be starting January 4th. So just, you know, one more little reminder there to go through and hop in, check that out. As one of the things I will mention a little bit on the next episode, there's some cool things that you can do with the Darkening of Trinstrum along with the season opening that might be able to help you out. So go through, look forward. I will catch you all next time. And before I actually forget, I'm so excited for this next episode, I'm forgetting my outro. So please, if you want to, send, any questions, you know, for myself, you know, I guess, or for Riker, on the next episode, send us an email, westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. Again, that's westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. One of the jokes that Leviathan and I had was that we'd have to have Riker on the show and do the items of the week and have him read the items of the week in Deckard Cain's voice. Well, I'll see if I can make that happen. No promises, though. But you can also follow the show on Twitter at the WM Workshop. So, you know, go through, give us a follow there to know when we go live, especially when we, you know, got a little, I guess the one advantage of just being a solo show is a little bit more flexibility. Might be changing things up here or there when I'm going to be going through and recording. But then also check out the live stream usually every other Wednesday at twitch.tv/blizzpro, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That is subject to change as I go through and just kind of like coordinate with some guests and such that we have planned to come on. And then, of course, you know, go through. If you like the content that we do here, please feel free to give us a follow to go through and catch when the episodes go live. And then give a look over at diablo.blizzpro.com, where you can find pretty much everything I talk about on the show and more over there on our home site. And if you like the show, if you like the content that BlizzPro puts out there, please feel free to go ahead and hit that subscribe button, because it goes back to deferring the cost of hosting the show, hosting the fan site, and it's something that we definitely appreciate. We're also in-game. We are the BlizzPro clan, and we also have the Westmarch Workshop community if you don't want to leave your current clan. We also have a Discord channel, discord.gg/BlizzPro. And then you can also follow me individually. I'm at NineBallGamer. And you can follow me at twitch.tv/NineBall. And I am hoping to have my once a year stream this Friday going through and playing a little bit of Diablo 2. And you can watch me die horribly to some lightning scarabs. But with that, again, thank you very much for going through and joining me on this episode. Thank you to everyone that went through and sent in your submission to the Book of Adria. Mr. Dorcas, I'm going to be going through reaching out to you, so that way you can go and give me your shipping information so I can get that lovely copy of the Book of Adria out to you. Again, that Book of Adria was provided to us by Blizzard Entertainment, so thank you very much to Brandy and the rest of the community staff for going through and giving me that in order to do this giveaway. And we'll catch you guys next time.